There are some very good suggestions coming through off the SMS machine about people that the ESPN magazine has missed out. Now, you've got to take this for what it's worth. It's an American magazine thinking that nobody beyond America will take any notice of what they're doing, and perhaps we shouldn't. But they haven't got, according to you lot, a couple that should absolutely be in there. One, Kelly Slater has to be in there, and he's not. That is ridiculous. And the other one, who my current guest, who is in the studio now, Nicole Livingston, head of women's footy at the AFL. Hello to you and good afternoon, Nicole.
Thanks, Andy.
There's no Michael Phelps in the top 20.
Yeah, I would have thought Michael Phelps would have been there.
How can they possibly put together a top 20? They've got Barry Bonds, who, you know, has got a career with an asterisk alongside it at number 17. They've got Peyton Manning, who's not even the best quarterback in the last 20 years, at number 3. Tom Brady at number... No, you're a Patriots girl. At number 20. How they put him above Brady's completely beyond me. And no Michael Phelps or Kelly Slater in there. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, sometimes you get a bit focused with recent history. You need to think a bit broader.
Well, 20 years is 20 years. Bit of a stock take. AFLW number 2 grand final this Saturday at Icon Princes Park with the Bulldogs taking on Brisbane. It all starts at 12:35pm live on 11:16 SEN. Ben Waterworth, Terry Wallace and Joe Watton calling the action. Why was it the game in Carlton and not in Footscray?
We did consult with the Western Bulldogs about this. They've had some sensational home games. And in fact, when we look at the average attendances across season number 2, the Doggies, from a home game perspective, have had one of the highest numbers, regular people going out
terrific,
to watch the footy.
Yeah, it's
which,
great.
And I don't know whether you got there, but it was just fantastic.
Yep.
The atmosphere, electric, exactly what we want it to be. But the capacity was the biggest issue for us in determining the grand final venue. There's obviously an allotment of ticketing for both of the clubs, both competing clubs. The players have requests as well. And when we looked at that, by the time we got through all of those, capacity was probably around 9,500,
okay, so
maybe 10 at a push.
Yep.
And where it is, very much a dense area around there where there's not, I mean, there are a couple of fields that we could have potentially done a live site, but you know, to get the most people coming in at a standalone grand final for the women, it was Icon or Princess Park.
So what sort of stuff will be happening outside the ground? You talk about a live site. Will there be a grand final type celebratory feel in the parklands around Princess Park?
We'll certainly be activating outside in the park, but our main goal is to get as many fans into the ground to watch the grand final. So one of the things that we also wanted to make sure we did was with the AFLW members, because that's an emerging market for the clubs as well. Lots of clubs did different strategies when it comes to their women's members. Some of them just did an add-on to the men's membership. Some clubs did standalone membership. So it was important for us to also allow AFLW members to be able to get into the ground. So we're not ticketing, but we do have an exclusive access period of a half an hour prior to the GA opening that members can come in. So that's from 11 o'clock.
How many do you think will turn up? What, have you got a gut feel in mind, or have you got a projection
in mind? Look, I get nervous about this because I don't want to say it's going to be a lockout. Then I think that, you know, stops people from coming. We know that, you know, at least around a third of our crowd have been women aged around 30 to 45 or 30 to 49 and also children. So we want to make sure that it's comfortable for people to get into the game. So, you know, I'd be happy if we're getting close to filling Icon Park. I think our capacity at the game is around 21,500. So if we get close to that, that'll be fantastic.
I reckon over 15, it's a super
result.
Well, I reckon over 15 is a great result.
You know what? We're such a sports-loving city, and we have so much on. And if you don't love sport, you love the garden. So the flower show's on as well.
That's right. That's true. There's a bit going on.
Yeah.
Talking to Cole Livingston, AFL head of women's footy. It's such a shop window, the AFL, and it's such a the AFLW, and that's why we focus on it, the prism of women's football through the AFLW. You arrive at a time of unbelievable growth, probably by and large, to the AFL's commitment to go early with the AFLW the way they did last year. Put into perspective what the growth coming through, the numbers of women's growth female growth in this game coming through your office. Just how substantial and exciting is it?
Well, it is exciting because we've obviously got an expanding AFLW as well, where we have two new teams coming in next year, and then we have a further four teams coming in 2020. So we don't have 2018 growth numbers yet because from a community football point of view, those registrations are still open. They're nearing close around the nation. But we know that in 2017, the growth was phenomenal. It was around 76% when it comes to female teams. So we had 1,690 new female teams created around the country in 2017.
1,690
new teams, female teams.
This is at a time when, you know, male numbers, and we, you know, there's some highly profiled ones northwest of Tasmania and the regions in Victoria are struggling to hold on to what they've got, which is a sad reality of footy. But 1,690 new female teams.
That's exactly right. And in 2017, we had 463,364 women and girls nationally playing some form of Australian football, Australian rules footy.
So you come from a sport where there was absolute gender equality in swimming.
Yes,
absolute.
Yes.
You could swim the same events, the same...
Except for the distance. So someone will pick you up on that. Okay. We have for 2020 now in the sport of swimming opened up a 1,500 freestyle for women and 800 freestyle for men. So that now is at parity.
Yep. I'm glad you've straightened me out on that. In terms of...
was exactly the same.
Yeah, there you go. So to see what you can see now in women's footy and the opportunities that are being presented to young girls like you when you decided to go swimming instead of something else... What a landscape, what a world of opportunity they have in front of them.
We know that we're going to have significant growth in 2018, and that's one of the challenges for us. But we're now entering a period of time where we have a generation of young girls that won't know a time where women didn't have this elite pathway open to them. So that, for me, is really exciting. But I think it does provide an opportunity for girls to actually see, you know, who or what they can be when it comes to football. So when I was a little girl dreaming about being an Olympic swimmer because I'd seen them on the telly and I'd met them actually at the Glass House when they had the 1980 Olympic trials there at the pool where Collingwood are now based. You know, I was just completely rapt to be meeting Olympic swimmers. So I see that week in and week out as I go to the games and I see boys and girls meeting our football players, our women football players, and the amount of care and time that the girls take with the audience I'm really proud of them for that, and I hope we continue to have that connection as we go on year after year.
We will. I've got no doubt we will. The memo, the obviously the way women's football is played, and the showcase that we see at AFLW level is the course of much conversation at a radio station like this, and in chat rooms and forums all over the place. There's people who love it because it is what it is, and then there are people who hate it because they don't play as well as the boys and the men. The memo that went out early in the season, if you had your time over again as a collective, would you have sent that memo out?
I wouldn't have put it on a memo.
Yeah.
Probably just would have gone in an email. But and I feel like I've sort of spoken a lot about the advice that we gave out to clubs after round number one. And it was well thought out. We spent an incredible amount of time engaging with the coaches after that first round. The Victorian-based coaches came into the office individually. You know, we got on the phone to the interstate coaches. And it was more an analytical review of what the whole round presented. So it wasn't just one game, as everybody
it felt like that, though, focused on. It did feel like that, Nick, because the rest of the round was not a reflection of what happened in the Carlton-Collingwood game.
But there were incidences in the other games as well where there were high stoppages, a lot of congestion. So those were also given as examples to the coaches across that first round review. And in fact, we continue to have that available to the coaches to check in with David Rath to be able to look at the analytics of the game and to get any advice as to what David was seeing about those particular games.
Yep.
For me, coming from the sport that I come from, where we actually utilise things like biomechanics and analytics and data, so it's just completely ingrained now into most sports, and it is also in clubs. But I think the women's scale of competition and the women's scale of staff and resources is very different to the men's. There's not the same level of resources available to the women's in the club land, as well as also in the AFL. We are growing as well. We have access across the business at the AFL, but we are a small team when it comes to women's football. So I think to be able to get access to an expert eye who is unbiased, you know, he's not, you know, from one particular club, it will be similar moving forward in 2019, where we start to think about how we can actually help with injury prevention.
Yep.
And I know we're always looking for competitive advantage when it comes to the various clubs, but, you know, there probably needs to be some advice right across the 10 clubs for starting pre-season about what the best activations and prehabilitation on knees, lower limb, shoulders as well is an issue.
No one will disagree with that. But this, to me, it felt to me like you're telling people how to play the game in a more attractive fashion, and it felt to me as though that was giving the people out there who don't like women's football the opportunity to whack it with the under the auspices of support from head office, who were saying, we don't like it either. We love what AFLW is, but we don't like it if it's going to be played like this. We don't want you to play it like this. We need you to play the game in a different manner, because we've got to sell this thing quickly. and create an attractive
I can see
product.
How people may have thought it was about that, but for me it was genuinely more about, it's a very short season. You think about 7 home and away, 7 games or matches that players have the ability to be able to hone in on the situational football and develop a football brain for in game time, develop the skills for in game time.
Of course, absolutely.
And to actually give some advice as to how to get the ball moving, I think was probably more where it was coming from, as opposed to we don't like what we're seeing and it's a bad style of game.
Okay. Katie Brennan's situation has raised this question about whether women in the AFLW should have the right to pay a fine instead of copying a reprimand. Is this going to be something that will be discussed in the review of AFLW 2?
I feel uncomfortable given that Katie's situation is still progressing in terms of an appeal. Everything that we do at this very young stage of AFLW, we do review. So we're already planning in terms of a review across our own business, review with clubs. We've already got the football operations staff booked in. We continue to also discuss the year ahead with the 2 new clubs coming in. We're about to start meeting with the 4 new clubs for 2020 to check on their progress and how they're going. So from a match review panel point of view, it was reviewed holistically last year. So, you know, I'm happy to the powers that look after that within the AFL have that review process with them. I have an uncomfortability about the fining situation. And I know that people will say, well, you know, missing a game versus paying a fine. We're at the point in time where our athletes are only part-time athletes.
Yep.
They are elite in heart, soul and mind and everything that they do in terms of their professionalism, but they're not being compensated to be full-time yet.
Yep.
So, you know, do you work out a pro rata on what the men are doing? You know, you
maybe
still also have to make it, you know, if you have done the wrong thing, you still need to make it
a penalty.
A penalty, So all of those things I think probably need to be at least discussed. But I do feel very uncomfortable with, if we've got a young player that's not earning very much money, you know, they've relocated interstate, you know,
they're not in a position like one or two other players are. No, I totally get that. So in terms of money coming into the game, and your job is beyond the AFLW, we understand that. But are we getting closer to asking people to pay to come to AFLW games to generate cash like that? And do you think, how far away are we, do you think, before a television broadcaster is going to have to pay some sort of rights to cover the game?
I'll take the broadcast side first. So we're exceptionally pleased that we do have our games on television.
Of course, and it's pivotal.
It is. Yep. And if we look at women's sport, although we are getting onto TV more in women's sport, it's always been a stumbling block for promotion of women's sport to get them on the TV. So we're exceptionally pleased that we have Channel 7 supporting us and also Fox Footy supporting us. And we've done some, I think, some creative, inventive things this year that we need to start looking at. We need to start looking broader. So we've actually done a Facebook Live show every Monday reviewing the season as well. And I think that's actually attracted quite a bit of coverage as well. And also our app, we actually, on some of the weekends, we had 45,000 people on a round streaming the games. So, you know.
So there's interest.
There's interest. There's interest, but it's growing interest.
So it's not ready for some, to put the hand out yet and expect somebody to pay for the right to broadcast it?
Well,
do you think we're there yet?
That will be up to the broadcaster to determine whether or not, from a sales point of view and a ratings point of view, we'll just continue to focus on, you know, assisting the clubs, assisting the players, and providing the competition structure for them to be able to get out there and do the best that they can.
And what about paying to get in?
That's something that we need to consider. The thing that, and it will be discussed, but the thing that I am pleased and proud about is that 30% of our audiences have never gone to football. They've never really
followed. It's a new audience, Nick.
It's
a
new
audience.
It really
is. It really is.
And one would argue that potentially part of that new audience is to, you know, that families in this day and age do struggle to make ends meet, and going to a free football game is something that is good for families. So we need to, if we do end up at a price point, we need to also consider, you know, we want kids to be able to come, we want families to be able to come. So it needs to be something that is affordable without people jumping up and down saying that potentially it's disrespectful to the women that we're not charging enough.
No, I think that's fair enough. Yep.
So these are all the balancing
acts
they're thinking about. And I have to say, Andy, I've been involved in sport for a very long time, sports administration for a very long time, and have grown up in Melbourne and have been around footy all my life. But seeing it now in the position that I hold, I've never seen a more focused, engaged, passionate group of supporters. And and I've learnt very quickly that, you know, whatever decisions we do make, we're not going to make everybody happy, but we have to put a hand on our heart and know that we're doing what we believe is the right thing to grow AFLW.
People, as you very well know, as a born and bred Carlton supporter, Nick, people are very passionate about this game. Next year's going to be huge. Fixturing the two new teams and working out timelines, when to start it, when to finish it. Does the grand final get its standalone weekend? These are all massive issues for you. We can't wait to see how it all plays out. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck with everything in front of you.
Thank you very much. And just a reminder, Icon Park is the grand final Saturday, the 24th, this coming Saturday, and
you
it's
can
12:35.
And our coverage here starts at 11:30. You can call it Icon Park. I'm going to keep calling it Princess Park. Is that all right?
Yeah, I've got to respect Icon's helping.
As the AFLW girls like to call it, Princess Park.
I like it.
I'm going to keep calling it
Princess Park.
Thanks for coming in. Nicole Livingston, AFL head of women's footy, the grand final Saturday, 11:30. The coverage starts here. Ben Waterworth, Joe Watton and Terry Wallace. Joining, in fact, it might start at 12:30, I think, the coverage. I might have given you a bump steer on that.